It has been said that the Transfiguration is the centerpiece of the gospel. And there's a sense in which that's true. It's a manifestation of Christ's glory. And Paul, in that second reading, uses the word manifestation twice, and then he also talks about bringing to light. Well, a few months ago, we celebrated Epiphany, and Epiphany is a word that means manifestation or bringing to light. Christ manifests God in human flesh by giving himself into our humanity, giving up his divinity, his place with the Father, and taking on our human nature for a time. There's this self-giving, this laying down of life that characterizes the Son, the eternal Son, the second person of the Trinity. And that gets manifested in various ways, the baptism in the Jordan by John, and we hear the voice of the Father in that manifestation as well. This is my beloved Son, listen to him. Here we hear those same words from the Father at this manifestation of his glory in the Transfiguration. So what happens exactly at the Transfiguration? Does Christ transform or get changed? Not really. What gets changed is the eyes of the disciples, Peter, James, and John. They see something in Jesus that they had not seen before. Jesus doesn't change and suddenly become the Son of God. He already was. Jesus doesn't change and become in complete union with the Father so that the glory of the Father shines through in his body. Not really. He always was that. But the eyes of the disciples were able to see it. And then you have this appearance of Moses and Elijah. And Moses and Elijah were people who in their own lifetimes anticipated and longed for this glorification, and now they get to be there with it. And there's something timeless about this whole thing. One of the reasons we don't understand this as a change in Jesus is because Jesus, the eternal Son, was there at creation. Everything was created in and through him, and he is the source of all life. And now it just gets manifested in a certain way, but it doesn't suddenly become true. It always was true. And so the historical figures of Moses and Elijah is the gospel writer's way of saying that this always was, and that there's a timelessness about the presence of God. God is always present to the world. God never leaves or turns his head and does not think about the creation that emanates from God. It's always present to him. And so Moses and Elijah from different centuries before are now present at that moment. And we were present at that moment. And the saints to come after us were present at that moment. And we celebrate that liturgically every Sunday, don't we? What we celebrate here is the Last Supper. It's Calvary. But it's also the heavenly banquet. It's the kingdom realized in the future. And it's us now. It's the timeless moment of the liturgy that is always now. Abraham, in that first reading, is asked to trust in God and go out from his homeland, from the security of family and flock, and trust in God in this lifelong journey that he knows not where. And he does it, amazingly. We have something like that happening this morning. We have some catechumens here who are going to be sent later today to the bishop at the cathedral this afternoon. And the bishop, on behalf of the church, and then really on behalf of God, is going to elect them. He's going to choose them. This rite is an important part of their journey to the Easter sacraments because it's this formal ritual recognition that ultimately, even though it seemed like their choice, it wasn't. It was God choosing them. And we have been walking this journey with them. We've had other rituals here at this Mass with this particular group of people. And we have been praying for them and supporting them. And we are sending them this morning. So a great cloud of witnesses surrounds these people. It's God and the church calling them, and it's the local church sending them. They're getting it from both ends, you might say. And this support is so important to them, but it's also important to us to witness these things and to pray for these people, because it's our recognition that this great journey of faith involves all of us, and we're always on that. And Lent is that annual reminder that we're really on a pilgrimage. We're walking through the desert that we call this earth on the way to a promised land that we don't know a whole lot about, but we trust, and we make this journey in faith, trusting in the glory of that promise. And one of the reasons for the Transfiguration was to bolster the trust and the faith of those disciples, because Jesus had just told them that he was going to die, and they were horrified at that. And Jesus wants to reassure them that the death is not the end, the glory is the end. And every Lent we're all asked to die. To die to certain things, to die to self particularly. And baptism, which these people are going to receive in about 6 weeks, is about dying to the old and rising to the new. And we have candidates here who were already baptized in other Christian faiths, and they're going to join us at Easter. They're going to come into full communion with us. And so there's a dying to an older tradition that they grew up with in order to embrace fullness of faith with us. This is all about dying and rising. It's all about our participation in the Paschal mystery of Christ. And the Transfiguration is given to us to reassure us that all that dying leads to resurrection. That whatever we give up, we get back 100-fold in sharing in the very glory of God.